nachos.
No rain, no wind, no snow, classico.
Holding the high line with Rabbi in red. Talking the rabbits and turning heads. With questions from you and analysis. In your car, in your home. Thank you for tuning to Holding the High Line.
Hello, Rapids fans, and welcome to Holding the High Line with Rabbi in Red. I'm Rabbi, aka Mark. Usually Matt does the rundown, but tonight I'm in the hot seat. I get to play the number nine, baby. We saw the Rapids this past week get eliminated from the playoffs this Saturday night without even firing a shot as LA Galaxy downed San Jose and sealed the Pid's fate. The USMNT floundered and fizzled to a loss in Japan. Well, not in Japan, but against Japan in an empty stadium in Germany, followed by a dull nil-nil draw to Saudi Arabia in a completely empty stadium in Murcia, which apparently is a part of Spain. U.S. soccer Twitter is ready to fire Greg Berhalter. How about you? I am not joined by a man named Matt or a person who has red hair, but rather by a man who draws more pleasure from a Rapids 2 MLS next pro match than is healthy or sane. It's our friend, Joseph Samuelson. Joseph, how are you, my friend?
Man, I feel like I just got sliced and diced there.
No,
I'm doing great. Thank you for having me on. I'm excited to make my second ever Holding the Highline cap. Still have yet to be invited on the show when the Rapids have not been eliminated from playoff contention. So, I mean, I don't know what that says about what it says about Mark and Matt, but
you know, we'll bring you on when it's still relevant. No, we're not. It has nothing to do with that. Everything revolves around me and Matt's vacation schedule, which of course also revolves around the ability to attend Colorado Rapids games because our lives, of course, are dominated by this terrible soccer team to which we are both bowing in fealty to and hopelessly addicted to, despite the fact that it's unrequited love. They almost never love us back. Me and Matt, of course, started following the team after they won an MLS Cup. And in the time that Matt and I have covered this team, they have never won a trophy. But Joe's going to change that, Matt. Joe, for those listeners who don't remember your appearance in episode 35, can you tell us a little bit about you and a little bit about how you fell in love with and or caught this horrendous addiction to the Colorado Rapids?
There is no team in MLS I'd rather be addicted to than the Colorado Rapids. For those who don't know me, here's a little, I guess, a biography. I'm about to turn 28. I grew up playing soccer, as many suburban white kids do. From the age of like 3 was when I first kicked a ball, and I played until my parents told me, "You're not making the travel teams. You should do an extracurricular that's going to help you with your with the rest of your life, basically." And so I kind of dropped out of the sport. I played like, you know, some club ball in college. But because I grew up in Alabama in the dark days of MLS, where there were no Southern teams, I had sort of no association or, connection to the professional game aside from, you know, US national team, which, you know, I would watch whenever they would come on, and kind of just, I would watch during the international breaks and kind of drop back into this ether of, you know, whenever the next soccer game is going to be.
Yeah.
I finally moved out to Colorado, I want to say 6 years ago, became a season ticket holder because it was the first time I was living in a, you know, metro area that actually had a team.
Sure.
And you know, over time, actually it was your back pass column that inspired me to start writing, because I felt that Rapids fans, one of the reasons why a lot of them weren't paying super close attention to the team, or why there wasn't as much interest in the team, because there wasn't a lot of coverage.
I was laughing because for two reasons. One, you probably started writing about it for the same reasons I started writing, which was basically nobody was writing about the Colorado Rapids. There was one guy back in the day who wrote for Burgundy Wave. And he sent out an email one day saying like, "Hey, anyone else want to write?" And I was like, sure. I can't do any worse than you. You're the only other guy who does it. And he was great, actually. That's Chris White, who no longer covers the Rapids, but is the OG. He started Burgundy Wave back in the day. And the other thing I was laughing at, Joe, is self-deprecating. And this is not a reflection on you at all whatsoever. It was more like you probably had the same thought that I did, which is like, well, if this guy can write about the Rapids, anybody can write about the Rapids. I don't have to be good or anything, you know? So,
yeah. So it was really just like, I saw, like, I really enjoyed Backpass, and I loved that.
Oh,
you know,
thanks.
There was actually somebody who was writing about it from like a tactical and statistical and analytical perspective. And I want to read more of that.
And the funny thing is, I don't really have as much time to do it anymore. And I really need folks like you and Matt and other folks who write or podcast about the Rapids to kind of like give your thoughts. And I think the other thing that's really wonderful about not only the soccer writing and podcasting community in MLS specifically, but also your work, which I've really enjoyed, is everybody has a different perspective on the game. You can't describe everything that happens in a game. I will write something and it'll be a very brilliant take on what our fullbacks were doing, but I wasn't really paying attention to how the wingers were being used or how spacing was being, you know, dealt with off the ball. Or I spent all that week thinking about the offense and not thinking about the defense or not thinking about transition. And there's just too much going on in a soccer game to really cover it. I don't know if you've ever coached before, but one of the great things about coaching both basketball and soccer, which I've coached, is the head coaches would turn to me before we go into the locker room in a game when I was an assistant in either of those teams and say, what did you see? And I would say something, and sometimes it would be relevant and sometimes it wouldn't. And sometimes you're watching a part of the game that nobody else is seeing, you know, like, have you found that? Are there things that you've been noticing recently that like was like a unique take that you were like, nobody else is noticing this, huh?
Yeah, I feel like this kind of gets into a whole discussion about like theory of soccer and stuff like that, which I'm not sure if we have the time nor expertise to really discuss. But like for the longest time, I used to sort of be of the perspective that like I only focused on shots, right? Shot creating actions, you know, plays that led to goals, because, you know, goals define soccer games. And I feel like doing that, I lost a lot of like the analytical perspective on like the chances that were like almost there, but not quite, that didn't result in shots. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Absolutely. I think like, it's like, if even now, if you look through like a game feed on like MLSsoccer.com or like ESPN or something, where they give you like the highlight, like, you know, the, you know, sentences about like what happens in each minute, they don't always, you know, even acknowledge those aspects of the game. So those, when I rewatch Rapids games, which I usually try to do before I write about them, because one, knowing the result about a game and then watching it with that hindsight just gives you a whole different perspective. And two, I feel like you just miss a lot of those in the game, because people tend to come back, they focus on the big chances, like the one that just missed the post or the one that ended up in the net.
Mm-hmm.
So I really appreciate, like, I really like to focus on like the chances that, you know, kind of almost got there, but didn't actually get all the way.
Yeah.
I think like that part of the game is really interesting to me. Like, why did those chances not result in shots where others did?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's well said. And I think it's one of the reasons why you and I are both more interested in expected goals than any human being should be. Because I think a lot of, and I think I'm guilty of this. To be serious, I think a lot of fans are right to be critical of a soccer team that doesn't put the ball in the back of the net. And for season after season, I will typically say about the Rapids, like, oh, you know, they produced a 1.7 expected goals, but were shut out 2-0. Like, we should have scored there. Like, we just had bad luck. And like, that's a thing that you can fall into. But the inverse of that is still true, which is that the team, the Rapids in specific, you know, over the last couple seasons, but most soccer teams in general, it's mostly about creating chances. And if you create more chances than your opponent, overall, you're likely to do better. And I think, you know, noticing that is really important. And then, but the tactics is that other piece, because I think, you know, when I was writing for ASA, American Soccer Analysis, they were really long on mathematicians. You know, they were really great on guys who could create models and use complicated statistical regressions that I literally just did not understand. Like, you know, if you didn't have a finance degree in arbitrage from Wharton, or you didn't have
still don't fully comprehend Goals Plus. I'll be right. Straight up honest about that. Right, get how they do it, but I'm not like...
Well, and I think you have to be math nerdy enough to do either one of two things. One, be able to look under the hood and say, I understand this algorithm and here's why I disagree with it. Or to open up the hood and say, I understand this algorithm and here's why it's absolute brilliance. But the challenge with ASA in terms of their, now we've gone real nerd land, so this is fun, but the challenge with ASA and that algorithm is it's proprietary. They're not going to share it with you. And there's nobody over there who's that brilliant at writing about or explaining it. And the people who really were great at writing and explaining it, there were like four or five writers who were really either writers or stats guys who are really exceptional at it. They all work for professional soccer teams now, right? Like the great thing
that tended to happen to a lot of the old school soccer bloggers that I used to follow in like the 2010s.
They all got jobs.
Yeah. I'd be reading like all this stuff. Oh, wow, this is great. And then they would just like ghost their website. And most of them don't like, they don't pay for their hosting fees anymore or whatever. So like the site's just like sort of left into the ether.
Yeah.
Because well,
that's
on
the, that's both on the downside and the upside. On the upside, you got guys like Brian Shiretta who, you know, went from being a soccer blogger into a full-time professional for, I think he's with ESPN now. And I mean, honestly, like Matt Doyle started out the same way that you and I did. He was a Metro season ticket holder back in the day, and that's how he fell into this. And you may not know this because why would you? But like my actual superhero origin story with becoming a soccer writer and soccer fan was a high school buddy of mine was the digital editor for MLSsoccer.com back in the day when they wrote a lot of their own content. And he hosted a podcast called March to the Match. And I had to drive up to Steamboat Springs, Colorado, starting in 2011 to be the rabbi up there. And I had, you know, 6 to 8 hours to kill in a car. And so my friend Jonah was along with me for the drive. Jonah and Matt Tomaszewicz, the Shin Guardian. So for those of you who are old school MLS fans, you'll remember those names. All right, that's enough of us nerding about soccer podcasting. By the way, this is like what me and Matt talk about this all the time off the pod. We just think it's not very good content for the podcast, but I think it is. I think it's great to talk about.
Sorry, Matt, if you're listening to this after the fact.
Matt is definitely not listening. Matt is basically like, I got the week off, baby. I think Matt's in Miami a throwball match. Which now that there was an actual hurricane, he was going to go watch his Miami Hurricanes, the sporting team. And now there was actually a hurricane near to Miami. I don't know if he actually saw a throwball game this weekend. We'll find out where Matt was, but he was not in Amsterdam watching Cole Bassett or Sam Vines sit on the bench as they would. All right. With that, we're going to do we have a great opportunity here with having Joe Samuelson on the podcast in which we can kind of get different takes. There's no point in breaking down the last Rapids match. For one, we already broke it down because they were off this week because of the international break. But for two, like, what's the point of breaking down any of the last couple matches when we have a new guest on who can give us kind of a sweep of the whole season? So, Joe, if you have any kind of like either bullet points or specific first thoughts about like, how would you contextualize the 2022 Colorado Rapids season? Were there things that went right? Was it mostly things that went wrong? And what are some of your like main bullet points about what went wrong?
I think that this was the Rapids going into the season were a middle of the road Western Conference team that got crazy unlucky with injuries, player regression, and those two things were exposed by what I would consider to be subpar transfer dealings and like inadequately replacing players that left in the off season and also in the middle of the season.
Who do you think was the biggest off season departure where you're like, ooh, that hole did not get filled?
Cole Bassett.
Yeah.
I think that his relentless pressing and his like constant like harassing of defenders in the final third took the ball like, or it made it so that the defense didn't have to do as much work because the Rapids were doing more in the final third, if that makes sense.
Right.
Because so much of the Rapids play last season created chances just from like turnovers in the final third, mainly due to like relentless pressing of like Bassett, Barrios, and even, you know, Baji down the stretch. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Taking Bassett out of there, even considering that, you know, he hit the post way more than anyone should have reasonably done. But I think losing his non-scoring contributions was probably the biggest thing. But I mean, with all of that, I tweeted this out a couple days ago. You look at, do you know what Colorado's points per game is with and without Jack Price in the lineup this year?
I think it's pretty notable. I think it's like 1.7 and 1.1, something like that, right?
It's 0.93 without.
Yeah.
And it's 1.47 with.
Yeah. I was close, but not that.
Yeah.
Close.
Yeah. And like, but no, but seriously, like 1.47 is like, that's where Nashville is in fourth place right now with that. Or last time I checked, I haven't seen the updated score since the Seattle standings since the Seattle game.
And I think your point about Jack Price is great because it leads to a second point that some of the smarter guys in punditry have noted, but like the Colorado Rapids and I've broken down at different spots over the last couple of years, which is the Colorado Rapids have been very, very reliant on set pieces. They've been very, very reliant on corners, and without Jack Price in the lineup, they weren't doing as well. It was interesting. I interviewed Jack Price a couple months ago, and it was like the Rapids had just gone on a 2-game win streak, maybe a 3-game win streak, or 2 wins and a draw. They'd looked good recently, and Brian Acosta had put one into the mixer that ended up a headed goal. And so Jack was like, we were joking, you know, in the interview, like, oh, ha ha ha. Like he's doing well enough from the corner that maybe he'll steal your job. And then he went ice cold and nothing went in from the corner from that. That interview was in July. And I don't think the Rapids ever, I don't know if they scored a single corner kick or a free kick the rest of the season.
Yeah. I mean, and I don't know that, you know, if they have off the top of my head, but you're right spot on with the fact that, you know, Brian Acosta came in, did great on that one set piece, and everybody was like, okay, maybe not losing Jack is maybe it's gonna be okay. We all know what happened.
Are there places where regression was notable, or were there certain positions that should have been signed where you were like, god, they didn't get that, that's gonna be a problem?
I think on paper a lot of the replacements that they got were, I think at the time I looked back at like what I wrote at the time when they signed like Max and Abubakar Keita and all the guys that they got at the, you know, Zardes and all the and Biasia, you know, all these players that they picked up in the first transfer window this season. And I sort of came to the conclusion at the time that the team was just at best sort of like staying pat. Worst was downgrading in a few areas. My bar for Max this year is that I wanted to see him create more goal, have more goals, goal contributions than Namely did last season.
Yep.
Even considering his injuries, right?
Yep.
And he still hasn't done that, even if you include his Champions League goal. So I did not foresee Max being as I don't want to say useless because, you know, I think there's glimpses of potential there, but I did not foresee it.
Toothless.
Yes. Toothless is a perfect descriptor.
Oh, thanks.
So I think that in combined with the fact that everybody in the Western Conference pretty much improved this season was just a recipe for this team to like lose a lot of the mojo that they had from last season. Mm-hmm. And we haven't even talked about yet Galvan's absence from this team.
Right.
And I think him alone, having him this year to like push Barrios and Lewis in, on the wings and like sort of threaten their roles and as like a, you know, as attacking forwards, or even like the opportunities you might have to play him centrally behind, you know, Rubio or, you know, or who ended up, what it ended up be Zardes, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I think losing that option really impacted the wingers because one, there's way more minutes that Jonathan Lewis and Michael Barrios had to pick up as a result.
Right.
And two, there wasn't a guy on this roster who you could say is a direct, really competitor with those two.
Right.
It's really the best the Rapids have
right
in those positions.
I mean, for me, and I haven't thought too much about it, but you know, the midfield three, to your point about Cole Bassett and being a harasser, but a forward harasser, which I think is a really valuable position. It was a position that Tab Ramos with the U23s once suggested that Tyler Adams could occupy, that they could plug him in with the U23 USMNT as an attacking midfielder, and that he would do a lot of the kind of pressing and defensive midfield type work. But Bassett was doing that from a four position. When we lost Bassett, we wound up with a midfield three that was like, you know, Max and Brian Acosta and Jack Price. And what you have when I've looked at the numbers and with the way they play with both Jack Price and Brian Acosta is they're kind of sit back into space, pick off the ball type guys. They're not run around and cause mayhem. And my take with defensive midfield pairings or with midfield threes is you need a guy who's going to run around and drive everybody nuts and force people into making bad passes so that another guy or two can step into those lanes and pick off the ball. And we didn't have enough of that. We had a couple guys who, I mean, Jack Price does harass, but he's not a young man anymore. He's never been really, really fast. And he's always mentally preparing to switch and transition over to the offense. So he can't really move into a primarily harassing defensive position, but that's like a whole mentality of a player that we don't have, like a type of guy that like is like a Cole Bassett that we just haven't had. But I think, you know, and you and I are both, I think, understanding of this team being what it is, which is they're not going to spend a ton of money. We're not in the market right now for Ronaldo. We're not in the market right now for some big European signing who's going to come to the team and change everything, right? Like Harry Kane is not the imminent winter transfer change that's going to fix this team. But like, you know, of the players who got injured, who is, other than, I think you mentioned Brian Galvan, but is there another player that maybe you thought like, wow, his injury really set this team back? It really could have been a different year without, if we had had him.
I think the Rapids don't make a horrible deal for Viasia if Abubakar Keita doesn't right. go down with an ACL injury
right.
At the start of the season. I think that like Viasia is looking more and more like a panic buy to me.
Yeah.
Like, oh, you know, Trusty's gone, which is another thing we didn't really talk about, how, you know, the moment Trusty signed right. that Arsenal contract, his form just kind of cratered at the start of the season.
Right.
And then that impacted the play of Wilson and Abubakar. And now Wilson and Abubakar are basically starting in a back four,
right.
which they've never been exceptional in.
Right. There's like a cascading series of weirdness exactly. with this team. Like, you know, you also add to that a thing that we kind of forget about because it was so, you know, we didn't make a season extending contract offer to Kellen Acosta, and then we had Mark Anthony Kay in the mix, and we were like, oh, it'll be fine, we have Mark Anthony Kay. And then as the season sort of kind of went downward and downward, Porik Smith unloaded Mark Anthony Kay because we could get value for him with Ralph Prizzo. But Ralph Prizzo's not a today guy, he's a tomorrow guy. But like, that's a name, you know, those are two names we didn't really mention, and that like Mark Anthony Kay was fine, but he didn't move the needle for us to make the season better.
But they haven't replaced.
Right.
Like, and Ralph Kay's contributions, right?
Right. And Ralph Prizzo is fine, but he also isn't moving the needle. So like all the moves that have been made this season were like, none of them were like game changers. You know what I mean? Like Jossie Zardes is the most game changing. And I don't think anybody is like all that hyped up on Jossie. And I don't know. That's another question about whether you think Jossie is worthy of bringing back next year.
That's the hardest question. No, I mean, I'm dead serious because, like, on paper, you know, he's doing what he's been asked to do.
Right.
And also, I'm not super confident in the Rapids' ability to go out and get anybody better.
Right.
Monetarily or, you know,
it's like, it's been a minute. It's been a hot minute since the Rapids had a guy who was either, I mean, he is right on 10 goals, but like double digit goal scores for the Colorado Rapids are not a frequent thing. Like I can name.
Do you remember the last time the Rapids had two?
I know the last time they had two because me and Matt talked about it a bunch. It was 2010 when Connor Casey had
2018.
Oh wait, 2018 we had
Kai and Diego.
Oh, that's right.
And every and this is my favorite fact that Jason Jason Maxwell and I talk about all the time, which is that the Rapids have never made the playoffs when Diego Rubio scores double digit goals, which is just kind of like a bizarre, thing to exist. But yeah, like it's the Zardes question is so hard. And it's honestly coming down to the wire for me because I want to see if he can, if he actually hits double digit goals. But honestly, like you give me the choice right now. Like you tell me that the Rapids are going to go out and get like someone like Chicho Arango, right? And I say, oh yeah, don't re-sign Zardes. Go get one of those guys. Right.
Yeah.
But are we really confident in the Rapids' ability to do something like that?
Right.
I mean, and I'm not, and that's 750K to Columbus is a lot just for the right to re-sign him before you even get to the contract financials of it all.
And that was a publicly released number based. And is that based on how many starts he had or how many goals he had, or was the deal?
Yeah, so this is Brendan Plone's report.
Yeah,
in the Denver Post, which a good friend of both of us, I think Brendan's been on the show before with
he you, also I has think. Two caps, so he's like, okay. He's like a late replacement, but he's been in some consequential matches. He's been used when we haven't been eliminated. So
okay. I'm starting to see the pecking order here. No,
you can play your way in, man. You have a good showing today, and who knows, man? You might wind up a starter replacing me in the lineup. It's all good.
I wouldn't want to do that, but yeah, with oh man, I've completely lost my train of thought.
Zardes, money.
Yes, right. So the deal with Columbus was that we paid them, I think, like 375,000 GAM, like right off the top of the bat for him, and then the deal is that a total of 1.1 million in additional money can go to Columbus under specific circumstances. The majority of that 750 of that 1.1 million goes to Columbus if he re-signs with Colorado.
Right. Right.
The other remaining 400K ish was based on his total goals, which I think he has to hit 12.
Wow.
I think it's at 12 to qualify for like 100K. And then another was he on the World Cup squad?
Right. Which
he's definitely not going to be. And then there were a few other metrics in there, maybe total number of matches. I don't remember. But the point is like if they want to get him on a new contract,
yep,
they have to basically pony up $750,000 in allocation.
Boy, by the way, Porik Smith is as good at expected goals as I am, because I exactly said the same thing. I said that Zardes was going to get 12. That was my over under for Jossie Zardes in an article I wrote on Back Pass earlier this year. But I was doing exactly the same thing that you, the Columbus crew, and Porik Smith were doing, which is looking at his expected goals in past years, looking at his expected minutes this year, and just drawing a straight line. So the fact that he's under that is, you know,
it works against his favor for sure.
Yeah. He was a little snake bit at the beginning of the season. He created a bunch of expected goals that he didn't convert. And so he was behind from the start. He's been playing catch up ever since. So,
I also think that they make the deal for Zardes in the preseason And he comes and plays. He plays all those games in Tucson. He he plays Champions League. I think he would have come out of the gates a lot quicker than he did.
Yeah.
I think that was like a big problem was that he came in the mid-season and you got to start him because with the way the other forwards had been performing leading up to that, aside from Rubio, you just got to make room for a finisher like that.
Yeah. There's a world in which you turn over 2023 to Darren Yapi and you just give him 2000 minutes and see what he does, because why not? But like, I don't think that that's likely the way to go. I mean, I think another thing that's been difficult with the Rapids is there are all these young players who were supposed to kind of either come forward this year, or this was a transition year so that next year they could own the team. Ollie Larraz is one of them. Yaya Toure, Darren Yapi, Brian Galvan is another name. And then you've also got a guy who I had bought a lot of stock in and then didn't wind up. He's done about as much for my stock as the actual stock market has done for my stock, which
Sebastian
is not good.
Anderson?
No, well, Sebastian Anderson or Sebi, as Marcelo loves to call him. He has definitely been disappointing. No, I was very excited about Philip Mayaka because I watched him with Clemson.
Yeah. Everybody was excited about
and Clemson
Mayaka.
With Clemson and in the ACC, he was so fantastic. And there were so many other players on that Clemson team who were really talented, and they played against very good teams, and it just hasn't been. He hasn't, for whatever reason, it's just been, his running around on defense is very good, but his ability to connect passes. I mean, you've actually watched him a lot more with R2 than anybody
I've
else.
So much Mayaka minutes this year.
What do you see in him, and what do you see him? Yeah. Why hasn't he progressed?
I tell everybody the same story. The first time I saw Mayaka get extended minutes was in a Rapids 2 preseason game against Hailstorm, the new Fort Collins team in USL League 1, a game which the Rapids Rapids 2 lost. I think last second goal or something like that. It was like 2-1. And I think Darren Yapi got the opener for the Rapids. I saw Mayaka played all 90 minutes of that game. And the man got nutmeg three times by a team that had never played any game friendly. This was like literally Hailstorm's first.
That's so
like
weird.
Public game. Like they had done closed door friendlies with like a high school, I think, or a college in the build up to it. But this was their first ever like sort of, I guess, test against opposition I would consider on their same level. Right. And I mean, they just made him look silly for 90 minutes.
That's so weird.
And I just don't know. I didn't see enough from him throughout he improved. Like he didn't have any mares as bad as that during the MLS Next Pro season, but he didn't show me anything that made me think he's ready for MLS.
Right.
Like I think his ceiling is might in fact be like bench in the USL.
Yeah.
Like a rotation guy in the USL. I don't think
it's fascinating, but we have to move on and talk about some other things, but it's fascinating to watch players year after year. And it's fascinating to think about Porrick Smith and Fran Taylor in the front office of the Colorado Rapids. Brian Crookham in the director of development, and Mitch's name is escaping me, the director of scouting, and what they're looking for in players. Cause you can see a player who looks, who's had two good years in college, or who's been really solid with their youth team or whatever, just burning things up. They could have raw speed. They could have physical talent. They could be technically adept. But one of the things that you can't gauge in any sport is the drive to continue your development. And I think that's really a challenge with this latest crop of Rapids. Like I talked to a number of players who I thought they had their head screwed on straight and they look good. And I've talked to other players and thought, man, I have no idea whether you're going in the right direction. And sometimes I'm right. And sometimes I'm wrong. When I talked to Sam Vines, I very much got the sense of a guy who was very, very focused and driven. I got the same sense from Ollie Larraz, but he's been thrown off by injury. And I had no expectation from talking to Andre Shinyashiki that he had his head in the right place. And he really did. He propelled himself right out of, you know, his junior, I interviewed him junior year at DU and was like, this guy's crazy. He's never going to amount to anything. You know, you'll never hear from
back
this
when
kid
he was
again.
Top scorer for the U20, the Rapids U23 team that used to exist, that PDL team.
That's right. That year he actually had a knee thing or a hamstring thing, and he missed like a whole bunch of time. But then he blew it up at DU the next year. But anyways, Joe, you and me, we both watched at least some, if not all, of the two USMNT games recently, and they were not great. We're not going to recount exactly what happened minute by minute, as Matt likes to do, because I'm lazy, to be honest. But also because if you strung together all the highlights of the USMNT against Saudi Arabia, I don't know that you would have that much to talk about. There were a few fizzing chances, but mostly against Saudi Arabia, there was a lot of dumb-headed turnovers and moving the ball down the wings but not getting it central. And then against Japan, there were just a bunch of bad defensive lapses and getting smacked in transition. What do you take away from these two games? Are we all hands to the pump, panic stricken as USMNT fans? And how would you best calibrate expectation going into the November World Cup?
The Saudi Arabia game bored me to tears. It made me regret taking my lunch break to watch it. Yes. So long story short, like I'm not super excited going into November, but I think it's always been about 2026 with this group. I think that anybody who was expecting the US to even really win a knockout game this with this crop of players with no veteran leadership at all, like I think that's asking to be disappointed. To be honest, like my idea that this team is getting out of the group, like I'm not confident in that anymore. Where I was, if you asked me this time last year, right after the Nations League and Gold Cup wins, and when they got off to an okay start in qualifying, I was like, you know, this team is good enough to get out of the group. But now I'm not sure. And the reason why I'm not sure is I think that this team has fundamentally bad ideas about how to create chances with the personnel that they have.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it sort of stems from like this sort of attitude that we as Americans want to have our soccer respected. Like we kind of have this inferiority complex about like how the rest of the world views American soccer. And so for the longest time, people have been like calling for the US to play pretty possession, they've been calling for the U.S. to like sort of throw away the transition counter gameplays of right. yesteryear in exchange for, you know, the beautiful game. Right. And I don't think that the current group of players is the best. I don't think that's the best use of the current group of players.
Right.
And I think that's why. When you lose a guy like Musa, which the US didn't have during this window, right. all of their midfield creativity just went just completely out the window.
Mm-hmm.
And as you said, it resulted in, you know, sort of aimless working the way up the wings, right? Maybe you get a cross in that gets headed away, or more often than not, you just turn the ball over.
Yeah. I mean, to what degree, I this is going to sound insane because I sometimes watch opposing teams to the U.S. men's national team, and I really am interested in them, and I'm so interested in how they play that I'm almost in my head like rooting for them. As in the first few minutes of Saudi Arabia, I was just mesmerized by how they chose to play, and I really enjoyed it, right? Like they started pressing with their front three, and they had, you know, on brand for our podcast name, a very high line with their back line, and they compressed the midfield, and they basically said to the US, like, we're not letting you go through the middle. Go over our top. See if you can do that. Go ahead. And the US tried over and over again and just screwed it up over and over again. They had so many. The first half was like offsides call, ball kicked too long. You know, once in every six tries, they'd actually bad first touch. There was a lot of like, you know, the stats say the lore on Jossi Zardes is that he has feet of stone, that like his first touch is death. But if you look at his G plus receiving stats, he typically in the last 3-4 seasons has been an above average receiver of the ball. And I thought to myself, like, man, we could use a guy like Jossi Zardes who will settle a ball when it's over the top better than these guys will. I mean, and that was the thing that I noticed in Saudi Arabia. Was there anything that you noticed in Saudi Arabia or Japan that was like, wow, this team can't do this thing and we need them to do this thing? And players at this level should be able to do this thing, and they're not doing this thing. Are there any things?
Do you mean the U.S. or do you mean
the U.S.? The U.S.
Yeah. Oh man, I think they really. I just keep going back because, like, I don't think this. I think Berhalter is a great club manager.
Mm.
I think he excels in that role. I think if I was in charge of a team that had a huge analytics and scouting budget. And right. knew how to go out and get every type of player that he liked, I think he'd be a very effective coach. But I'm not sure that's there on the national team, because like, I don't, this team, I think really needs like that big guy up front. But every time the U.S. plays with the big guy up front, they don't play to the big guy up front's strengths. Right. So I think like Jordan Pefok, you know, would have been a great addition to this team, but I'm not sure it would have been a good addition to, like, I know he doesn't play how Berhalter wants him to play. Like right. he wants his forward to be like Jesus Ferreira, who's like dropping back and assisting with the buildup. And I get that. And that's why I just keep coming back to the fact that I think if you want this team to go as far as they possibly can in its current state with the current group of players, they just need to be playing completely differently.
Mm.
And the problem is we're out of time to start thinking about playing differently at this point.
Right.
At this point, you have to go with what you've been doing for the whole cycle. And I mean, when this team is on, it's on. Like when everybody is healthy and available, it's amazing.
Yeah.
But you think of these five players, right? Adams, McKinney, Musa, Reyna, and Pulisic.
Right.
Those five guys have rarely been on the field together. I think they have somewhere like between 90 and 180 minutes on the field at the same time. Because one of them is always injured.
Right.
It was Adams for a while, it was Reyna for a while. It's Musa now. There's always one of those out. And I think throw in Robinson, because as much as I like Sam Vines, the drop off from Anthony Robinson to Sam Vines and the way Berhalter wants to play is
it's interesting, because I find I've watched enough of Sam Vines's club matches to think like that guy is the light and the truth. Like he can now the challenge, of course, is the type of opposition he's playing against. A lot of people look really good in the Belgian first division, but it's not the same, right? Like you could very easily make the argument that the Belgian first division isn't even as good as MLS, and that he's tearing it up because he's playing against weaker opposition, but he looks very, very good in those matches. But you're right. And I think Anthony Robinson looks really, really good at left back when he's healthy. And I hope he will be good to go. You know, he should be. It's a minor injury from what I understand, but
So if this team has Musa and Robinson back, I'm a little bit more confident.
That's good
about their ability to get out of the group. But it's going to come down to their ability to break down a low block in Iran.
Yeah.
And we know that this team has, I mean, we saw all of qualifying, right? Like we know this team has a lot of trouble.
Yeah.
Away from the United States, breaking down a low block.
They can make Mexico look bad. They can go toe-to-toe, and they can play very well against a team like Canada, who are normally not that much to talk about, but this cycle were exceptional. They can look really, really good against those teams and then drop a nothing burger against El Salvador and really struggle. And that's, they play up and down to their opponents like no other team. Like, the U.S. is not Germany. You know, Germany blows out teams it's supposed to blow out. That's it. And so do the big teams like France. Even England in the last cycle have been the kind of team who did not struggle against minnows, and the U.S. team will make every game look like they're playing a very difficult opponent. The one thing I was going to say was, I think the two players who are pivotal for me, but haven't been pivotal in both this cycle and reliable overall in the last year are Brennan Aaronson and Christian Pulisic. Pulisic has, since he's been at Chelsea for the last 2 years, just barely gotten a lot of use. And he looked good in spots last year. And then this year, you know, he looks like a guy who's, he looks, and pardon me for being very Men in Blazers here and getting psycho emotional with an individual who I just watch and read articles about. And clearly I don't know the inner workings of the man. Although I've met his father, because his father was an assistant coach here for the Pittsburgh Riverhounds. But, but my sense of,
and a former indoor league player, I believe, if my memory serves correctly.
Right. I think that's right. But I feel like Christian Pulisic is just not in form right now.
Oh, yeah.
And it's really hurting the rest of the team. And we need him to be, we don't need him. We don't, you could argue that we need him to carry the team, but even if we don't need him to carry the team, we need him to be at least as good as Weston McKennie and Tyler Adams on a very good day, right? We don't need all three of them to be like beast mode. We need all three of them to be clicking and doing well. And I would say Pulisic looks shaky. Adams and McKennie look day to day. Like, that's my take on them. And I think you and I both see soccer very similarly, which is like, those are critical pieces. The last thing I'll say is this, which is like, I don't think any of the front three in either of those games really burned anything up or really impressed. Your point on PFOC is one that a lot of people have made, but I'm glad to hear it from someone who I like and respect, who seems to understand it. Because I think, I mean, for me, for my money, the guy who I wish was there more than anybody else is Daryl DK. I really like him.
That's a really good shot.
But he's also a flash in the pan. I mean, his meteoric rise has been meteoric and very, very recent. And so the idea that that guy is just gonna, but you never know, man. I mean, Julian Green 8 years ago came out of nowhere and saved our butts against Belgium. You know, maybe that was a miracle and not like a, not like written in the stars, but I don't know. Anyways, any final thoughts on the USMNT before we
I'm just
our final piece.
I am just excited to cheer for the United States at a World Cup again.
Well, that's fair.
Like, I mean, at the end of the day, I'm just going to be really happy to watch the US suit up and play on the highest at the highest level, the most important tournament in the world. And I know that getting to this point is difficult. And I do want to throw one more thing at you before we completely close the loop on this topic, because I know, you know, everybody wants to fire Berhalter, right? And I'm not like, you know, I'm not a really rash guy. And I know that you can't, you know, look what Spain did at the last World Cup, right? You can't just throw away a manager right before the tournament. It's just not a recipe for positivity. But long-term, what do you think about a guy like Hugo Perez?
Hugo Perez. Fill me in on Hugo Perez. Give me his biography.
I believe he's coach. I believe he's managing El Salvador right now.
Okay.
And I think I would argue that he has them punching above what their weight is. I think he's a good recruiter, as you can see by their ability to grab Alex Roldan, a player who I think would actually really be, I think could have been useful during qualifying. I think he has a lot of good ideas about how to best, like, he's a tactically flexible manager who's able to work with what he has and doesn't, you know, he doesn't need XYZ types of players to succeed, if that makes sense.
Crazily enough, I'm just looking him up now. So we've overlapped multiple times in our lives. He was in Los Angeles when I was living in Los Angeles since I grew up there. But he also was the U.S. U15 coach from 2012 to 2014. So he's been the U.S. Yeah. He's been a U.S. men's national team.
73 caps coach for the U.S. too.
That's crazy. Yeah. I don't really know, because he was around in that era. I mean, you know, the guy to ask, since maybe you'll get a chance to talk to him, is Marcelo Balboa, and ask what he thinks of him. And Cello's a really... Cello doesn't have Chela's a great coach when I've watched him coach the youth teams for the Rapids, because Chela doesn't have big tactical ideas. And actually, when you listen to him do color commentary with the Rapids, and that's not a slight. I mean, I'm sure he has tactical ideas. I'm not saying he's bereft of tactical genius. He's probably knows that. But what makes him a talented coach is that he watches players and how players go into tackles and what players are doing and player development. And that's why he's an excellent coach for the U15s. So asking Chela what he thinks of Hugo Perez might be really valuable. So yeah, that's a really interesting shout.
I think a lot of people, when they talk about US manager, they throw out guys like Pep, they throw out guys like Bielsa, throw out guys like Arsene Wenger. Oh yeah, these guys are going to come, you know, they're going to leave their, current cushy gigs in Europe, and they're going to come to the US. Right. And
I'm American happening. Coach. Like Jesse Marsh would be probably my ideal. And Marsh is based on the jobs that he's been taking the last couple, years, sure to be fired at some point in the near future, because that's he true. Keeps taking the, I mean, the great thing about the great thing about the jobs that those guys take is that they pay really well, because you know you can't be there forever. Jose Mourinho is Jose Mourinho. Like, he's going to last 3 years max, but he doesn't need to work. I mean, the dude's probably lying on a beach in the south of France as we speak. So all right, with that, we got to turn to our final segment, because we could go on and on forever, but I'd rather make sure that we don't burn you out so that we get you fresh for your next cap, Matt and I are talking about as like probably 2027, 2028. We can work. I'm just kidding. The Rapids have two final games. They play Dallas at Colorado in what will be our last home game of the year. It'll be Fan Appreciation Night at Dick's Sporting Goods Park, which is a lovely event if you've never seen it. Rapids fans in person. They give away jerseys. All the players give away their jersey to a random fan who's entered in a drawing. I think it's all for season ticket holders technically, but there's a lot of really nice little like gestures to the fans. And it's a good last shout to kind of get fans to come out to the game, even when there's really nothing to play for. But that is actually the question. And the final game will be in Austin. I don't think it's likely that either Austin or Colorado will have anything to play for at that point. Austin has pretty much stamped themselves into second place in the Western Conference. I'm fairly certain there's nothing can dislodge them from that position. And the Rapids can't make the playoffs. What do these games mean? What do you want to see? Who cares what Dallas and Austin do, but what do you want to see the Rapids do in these last two games? Who do you want to see them play?
Sure. I do want to push back on one little thing you said.
Go.
Which is that Austin's not going to have anything to play for. And I think you look at, I know they might not have anything to play for in terms of standings, but MLS is about being hot going into the playoffs.
Mm.
And I have no reason to think that Austin's not like going to just like phone in a game. I haven't looked at the playoff schedule because it hasn't mattered for the Rapids. But I don't know how quickly the playoffs come after that last game of the season. But I think if it's just a week after, if it's like a week after the, as long as it's not like 3 days or something after the last game of the season, mm-hmm. I think Austin's going to probably try to win, because you want that momentum going into the postseason. But in terms of like what I want to see from the Rapids, I really want to see Prisso and Yapi each get a full shift. It doesn't have to be together. It doesn't have to be for both games.
Right.
I want to see each of them go like have a decent starting shift. I think every time Prisso started, he's gone out at the 45th minute. I'd like to see him at least for 75, because it's so hard to tactically evaluate like what he, like every time I watch him individually, I think he's done really well, but clearly there's something like sort of missing from his final product of Frazier's like leaving him out of the team so much. And I'd like to, you know, actually get an extended look at him with the team, because it's the best way I feel like it can evaluate his like contributions to the whole, right? And I also want to see Yapi get a full run out. Because I think a lot of his, I guess, invisible performances for Rapids to this season have been not really his fault. Mm-hmm. Like when he gets the ball, like the man is moves so quick for how big he is, for how physical mm-hmm. he is, surprisingly speedy. Kind of reminds me of like a less physical Daryl DK with more, with better ball control, mm-hmm. if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
He reminds me a lot of Zardes, honestly. Mm-hmm. I think Zardes is a really good analog to him, to Yapi as a player. Mm-hmm. And I want to see him like play a game where he's consistently getting chances. Across his sub minutes this year, he's only taken, I think, 3 total shots, but I mean, he's also only been getting like 5 minutes at a time. So I'd really like to see him, like how he looks with what Frazier wants to play with Yapi there. Those are the two biggest things I really want to see. Right. I want to see more minutes for those guys.
So for me, I'll just add, there's like two other players I'd like to see out there. Two veterans I'd like to see, if only to get a curtain call in what might be their final appearances, both as Colorado Rapids and as professional soccer players. So I want to see Anthony Markanek out there, because I think even though the way I looked at him, he had 1 good game and 2 not so good games. The 1 good game he had, which was against Seattle, which is a game the Rapids won, showed me enough that I thought the kid had a lot of potential as a future left back in Major League Soccer, which is really interesting considering he really played defensive midfield in college. So I think that's a very exciting possibility, but also just trying to suss out, like, does this guy have a career in Major League Soccer? What is his career in Major League Soccer? Like, what's his best position? Can he be a Swiss Army knife, throw him in at any position? And another player that I would like to see out there, even if it's not to start, would be Sebastian Anderson, the aforementioned, just because the kid hasn't really been doing a whole lot this year, and I'd like to see him kind of get out there.
Anderson is going to stay with the switchbacks for the rest
of
the season.
Right. I think you're right. I don't think we're
unfortunately.
See him again,
but... I agree with you that I would want to see. Yeah. I would want to see him there, but I don't think it's in the cards.
I think he had like 23 minutes this year. He ate some garbage time, and he never really.
He hasn't gotten a start for the first team since Frazier's first game as manager.
That's crazy.
Against New York Red Bulls.
Yeah. And then the two players that I want to see get curtain call, swan song, final opportunities are Steven Betashore, who, I mean, realistically, he might stick around for the Rapids. His contract, according to my records, expires at the end of this year.
They got 1 year option.
Of course they have options. I never think about the options, because I just think, like, you know, his contract is high enough that, like, odds are you're not going to break. It's not that high. I mean, he's on my records.
100K, I think.
172.
Oh, okay.
But the other guy is, and he hasn't been good this year, but he deserves the curtain call because he's a career guy and Rapids fans have loved him for many, many years, is Drew Moore. And
absolutely. You know,
to be blunt and a little bit harsh, he probably should have retired last year when there was still some tread left on the tire, but the dude deserves, you know, to be brought on in the 80th minute or the 85th minute so that he can get a standing ovation from the people who love him. So his little girls can, I think he has 2 girls, can see him run onto the field one more time. And the dude is a stand-up guy. He's a fantastic human being. And, you know, soccer for me has always been, especially as a writer and an interviewer, but also as a human being, like it's just another medium to tell human stories and an opportunity to engage with folks. And amongst the humans that I've engaged with on the Colorado Rapids, Drew Moore is one of the better humans I've ever dealt with. Now, that's not to say that Steven Betashore is not. It's just that I never got to interview him. By the way, Abubakar is also one of my favorite humans I've ever dealt with, but he will probably have many, many more years with the team. So we shall see. Any final thoughts, Joe, or shall we, as Matt likes to say when we end this, get out of here?
Let's get out of here and hope the Rapids extend their 4-game home winning streak over FC Dallas.
Ooh, that was good salesmanship. You're working on a front office position if you can keep that up. Do you want to tell us a little bit about where to catch your writing and where to read you on Twitter?
Yeah, listen, if you guys like what I've had to say in this show, there's a lot more of it on the internet. I am at JSPSAM on Twitter. I post the long form. I post a long form preview and a recap for every game on my blog, because I still use a blog in the year of our Lord 2022. JosephSamuelson.com. Just click the link in my profile. You aren't going to remember how to spell my name.
On Tumblr. Is that right?
Yeah, it's just it's Tumblr. A website I've had for, it's my personal website. Like, you can go through the archives on that and find stuff I've written in 2011, 2012 or something like that. So
whereas to find all my writing, you'd have to collect 7 different websites, including one that no longer exists on the internet anymore. You need to use the Wayback Machine.
Around MLS.com, am I right?
God, why do you even know that? Even I don't remember the name of the website that I used to write for before it catastrophically imploded, like a NASA satellite crashing into an asteroid attempting to change trajectories. That was the best, worst idea I was ever involved in. I can't even. Someday someone will do a 17-part documentary series on the history of Around MLS. No, they will not. Joe, I really appreciate you coming on tonight and helping out. You were a joy to speak to and learn from, and I hope folks really do check you out on Twitter and check out your website. It is a great read, full of really interesting information and a great perspective on the game. We need more good writers like you out there. And someday down the road, you should not hesitate. Even though Juan is singing your praises as someone with limited access, there's nothing wrong with taking a press pass every once in a while. The cookies in the press box are fantastic. The rest of the food's garbage, but the cookies are great.
I have made my way up into the press box. I just haven't done it since post-COVID.
Nice.
Honestly, I like my perspective as being a guy who watches from the stands.
I hear you.
My beautiful wife and I watch every game from the top of 109, though we are switching sections next year.
Ooh, east side, you're going east. You're
going to the south stands because our tickets have gone up to nearly $800 for tickets that used to be $400.
Womp womp.
And based on this past year, do not think that price increase is worth it. But you know,
someone in the sales team, like, reach out to Joe though and his wife and make them a deal. Like,
but at the end of the day, I still just really like that perspective of just being that guy who's like, I'm in the crowd like everybody else.
Yeah.
I don't consider like what I do to be like particularly special. I feel like anybody should be able to do what I can do. And I like sort of having that as my perspective, but you know, maybe one of these days I will make it back up to the press box and steal some of their cookies and drinks.
The migration is inevitable, because I was section 109 row 15 for many, many years and then moved on over to the other side. But you know, like, I'm east side till I die, baby. That's okay. The way it goes. Yeah, Joe, absolutely. Thank you so much for being on. You can catch all of our writing. Matt Pollard, who normally is hosting this show, you can find him at LWOS Matt Pollard on Twitter. You can find his writing at Last Word on Soccer. You can find my writing and Matt's writing at holdingthehighline.substack.com. You can support our stuff either at Holding the Highline by becoming a Highliner by paying $42 a year for a subscription, or I think we're $5 a month, $5 a month, but it's a better deal.
It's worth it. It's worth it. I do it.
Additionally, you can follow me at soccer_rabbi. No dots. What am I talking about? At soccer_rabbi on Twitter. Lastly, we are sponsored by Anchors FC and Roughneck Scars, purveyors of fantastic threads for your neck or for your body. It's indoor season coming up now that the fall is slowly drawing to a close. Maybe your futsal team needs a new kit or a new jersey or a new scarf. I don't know, man. Or maybe you're having a bachelor party. Go check them out, Icarus and Roughneck Scarves. Thanks for listening to us. We will check you out next time, and peace.